time to tell the neighbors the Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is home.
Okay, we're here. Well, yes, we're here. It's Friday afternoon, and Fred Malone is here. Well, Fred, how you doing?
Good, Charlie. Again, this is kind of a surprise. I'm not usually here on Friday, so yeah. I had to go out of town last couple days ago on my Wednesday, so you were gracious enough to let me come in today. So
hopefully we've got our same audience. And
well, I hope.
Yeah. Okay. And last time Fred was on, he loaned me a book about the state of Ohio, written by the former state auditor. And that book is so complex on land.
Yeah, it goes all the way back to, well, before Ohio became a state,
yes,
basically,
right,
and when they were still doing survey work in this area and trying to determine where the lines were going to be. And so it's really a very interesting book. Jim Petro was,
yes,
auditor when the book was put,
right,
out. And you can tell that someone I'm sure it wasn't Jim, but someone in his office, put some extensive research and time into compiling that book because it's very. It's called it's called Ohio Lands, and actually, this is funny because I think I mentioned last time I was on, one of my other board members at Malabar and myself have been cleaning out the rooms over the garage in the big house to be used for our archives. And this was one of the publications I found up there in a drawer.
Wow.
And kind of glad to get it because it's called Ohio Lands, A Short History. And it really goes, as you said, it goes into a lot of depth on how Ohio was formed and how the counties were developed and how some counties, in order to be formed, took parts of other counties like Marion County did.
Right.
So it really was kind of an education and a good lesson for me. So I'm glad to have this book, and it's great reference material too.
Oh boy, I think a lot of us only think about Indians and frontier and the first settlers, but hey, things were complicated.
They sure were.
And then I read about the Fireland area,
mm-hmm,
and oh my goodness.
Yeah, it covers the whole state of Ohio.
Yeah, great.
And interestingly enough, coming up the last weekend of this month, and I think maybe clear up until, the last weekend of this month, David McCullough, who you know is a world-renowned history writer, has written several books. One of my favorite authors, just wrote a new book that is just out this month. I think, it might have come out in April, called Pioneers. And it's all about the settling of Marietta and the area along the Ohio River.
Wow.
And David McCullough is going to be in Marietta the last a few days of this month, I think the 29th, 30th, 31st, something like that. And he's going to be appearing at that People's Theater downtown Marietta. Those tickets are sold out, by the way. My wife and I tried to get a ticket to go down and listen to him talk about the new book, but they're completely sold out.
Wow.
They have a special for those people that are so interested. If there's still tickets left, they have a special meet and greet with him at Marietta College, I think on the 30th. Those tickets are only $250 a piece. If you care to meet and greet with him.
Right.
But that was a little bit above my budget range. But he is going to be down at the Ohio State House, I believe, on June the 3rd, And those tickets are, I think, $60 a piece, and you can get a copy of the book. But I did find a copy of the book, interestingly enough, over at Sam's Club in Mansfield. We were there last week.
Okay.
And here's a copy of the book that just came out, Pioneer. And I got it for like $17.50, and the book price is normally $30. Kind of lucky there.
Great.
But I'm anxious to start reading the book because, you know, because of Rufus Putnam and people like him and the formation of the Ohio Land Company, that's the reason why this state's here.
That was
the complete foundation
of
it. And I'm interested to start reading Mr. McCullough's book because he spent I read a little bio information about it in the Columbus Dispatch, and he spent a lot of time, several months, staying in Marietta doing research there at the Marietta College and, of course, in their county records and that type of thing.
Wow.
So,
I like that part of the state. I would like to just spend some more time down that way because I used to participate, of course, down at Caldwell, Ohio, in their festival.
That's in the area, yeah.
And I like those people.
Yeah.
I can remember the first time I went down to Caldwell, it was, of course, I left mighty early, and it was still dark, and I passed Caldwell mistakenly, and all of a sudden I'm in Marietta.
Yeah. Were you on 77?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Going down 77.
It didn't take long.
No, it doesn't take long at all. You were probably going down to Caldwell to participate in the Sokom Festival.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I did that for years, and I'd like to go back one of these days and just see some of the kids who are probably grandparents by now.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
And I had so many of them working with me.
Yeah.
And learning. A lot about early trade.
I can't think of the route now. I think it runs out of Malta or McConnellsville, and it runs down into Caldwell, but it goes past a lot of the old strip mining area.
Yeah.
And there's a park down there dedicated to the strip miners. You've probably stopped at it before, that has the bucket from the Big Muskie.
Yeah, the Big
setting,
Muskie.
Yeah,
right.
Setting in this park.
Boy, that is huge.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think there was a couple of pictures there that has a couple of the marching bands from the area schools all inside
this bucket.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Unbelievable, the size of it.
And that brings me around to Marion Power Shovel sold out in 1977 to another company and changed hands several times after that and to the point where it's gone. And but it ended up as part of the old Bucyrus Erie Company.
Yeah.
And all the and I asked the other day, do you remember General Excavator in Marion? And no one did.
No one does.
And there was Osgood and all these other making steam shovels and other land moving. Well, Huber. Huber became Huber Warco. W.A. Riddell Company in Bucyrus joined them. But that's all past history now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, interestingly enough, a few weeks ago, we were hiking over at the Paul Sears Preserve right there on 19. And after we finished, we drove in to have a pizza at Baker's and, of course, went past where all that used to be there on Route 19 going into Bucyrus. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's got a different name over there. I forget the name now.
Yeah, I went by there just 2 days ago. Heckert... Nature Preserve.
Yeah, Heckert Nature Preserve is it, but the land was given to them by
Crawford County Park District.
Yeah, yeah, but by the land actually came from the Sears family, didn't it?
I knew the Heckert.
Well, now I take that back, Charlie. That's a different location.
Okay.
Heckert is the one on 19. We also went to the Sears. That's a state nature preserve.
Okay.
And
yeah.
That's off of Route 4 south of Bucyrus.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, or north of Bucyrus.
North,
no, south,
yeah,
now,
yeah.
South of Bucyrus. I'm sorry. I get myself turned around here.
Yeah, there's...
two different places. Apologize for that.
There's a Boy Scout camp that originated through one of the Michaels. In fact, we used to call it Camp Michael. And Michael was the Ohio locomotive crane owner.
Mm.
And, there was so much heavy machinery built.
Oh, in this area.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. Well, and they had the workforce because a lot of those people came up from the counties along the Ohio River where they couldn't find work.
Swan Rubber Company advertised in Kentucky newspapers for help.
Absolutely.
And what's interesting to me now, I read the obituaries every day, and one after another, people that were born in Kentucky are dying.
Yes, yes.
They've been there that long.
Kentucky or Scioto County, I get a lot from Portsmouth. There's a lot from Ironton, from Gallipolis. Right. We see them in our papers here. And, of course, with Portsmouth, you know, for years they had the steel manufacturing that took place out at New Boston on the west side of Portsmouth. And when that went under, a lot of those people came up to Marion looking for work at Whirlpool and at the Shovel and several other places in this area. Yeah. So
a lot of places processed iron ore.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
A whole different era, but we're in another era now.
Well, now it's technical and it's robotics and it's things like that that are bringing people to this area. But it's interesting when you stop and look at the history of how these families migrated to this part of the state and even further north. I mean, a lot of them went from the Scioto River all the way to Lake Erie to work in Toledo and in the auto industry too.
Yes, yes.
So it's interesting to find that people that started out in Pennsylvania, maybe that came from Europe or came from Scotland or Ireland and migrated into Pennsylvania because the hills of northwestern Pennsylvania look so much like Scotland that they settled there. Yeah. And then eventually they migrated into Ohio and went both south and north. So to me, it's part of history and it's just fascinating. And I think a lot of more people are finding this out as they go and do research on their family using this Ancestry.com and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, in Marion, the whole west to southwest side, the homes there once were the homes of the workers at the Shovel and all these other big factories.
Sure.
And when they closed, suddenly that money was gone.
Yeah.
And the upkeep of the homes
You could see the deterioration.
Yeah, right. And it's a shame, too.
It is.
Because at one time, that was a bustling area of town.
Oh, wow. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and it's not just Marion. I mean,
everywhere.
You know, it's everywhere. Look at Youngstown and what happened up there when the steel industry pulled out. Look at some of the car manufacturing that took place in northern Ohio and Michigan and places like Detroit. Look what happened to those cities.
That's right.
After those industries left. So
and I got to thinking, too, about retail stores. I noticed in Bucyrus there's several empty storefronts. But when you think about it, what can you sell in a small store to make enough money, enough profit to pay your insurance?
Yeah.
And everything else, it can't be done.
It can't. Well, you can't compete with the big box stores out there with the Walmarts and the places like that. You just can't compete with the price because they can buy so much cheaper in quantity.
Yeah. You know, thank goodness for one thing, they employ hundreds of people.
That's the only good part about it. Yes. But unfortunately, it's squeezed out all of what we call the mom and pop stores.
That's right.
And, you know, just looking at downtown Marion, step back 40 years ago to see how many mom and pop stores were there and how many are left.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
they just don't exist
and
anymore.
And I worked in a small clothing store in Bucyrus. We sold the best of everything.
Sure.
But it's gone, been gone for years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worked in an automotive parts company the same way. It's been gone for years.
Time marches on. Yeah, it does. And it's a whole climate, but then a whole climate change, but then you have to continue to look at these things because this is our history, and that's one of the things that historical organizations, not only here in Marion, but you know throughout the United States, that's the thing that we need to concentrate on, is not just what happened 150 or 200 years ago, but what happened as little as 50 years ago,
because people
our age and older are thinking about those things that happened when we were a youth and things that preceded us. But now we have to think about those people that are in their 30s now that don't know anything about what it was like to grow up in the 50s or 60s.
Absolutely.
And that's history to them.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure that we don't forget their history in favor of ours.
Right, yeah.
Because it's still all part of history.
Yeah. I was looking through some 1950 class books from Bucyrus this morning. Every business is gone that advertised in those what we used to call them our annuals. They're all gone.
Yep.
And it's necessary to adapt to a whole different way of life.
You were you were probably a part of the same organizations that I was that went out to the various businesses in town and solicited the advertisements for those aerials or those annuals that we did every year.
I remember a dealer in Richwood, a rather large dealer, said, you know, and this was 40 years ago or 30 years ago, said, Charlie, you know, every year we spend $2,500 minimum on advertising and school books and everything else.
So, and you wonder how much good it really did.
Well, yeah, you wonder because all you see is just a little blip in these books.
Yeah, and who looks at those? It's mostly the kids,
well,
you know.
That's right. Or like me, 50 or 60 years later.
Yeah, right. Well,
hey,
great
Ted, what's the best part about being so well-known?
Well, meeting all kinds of new people, you know, taking pictures and signing autographs.
That's great. What's the worst part?
That after selling a 500,000 autographs, I've got the worst case of carpal tunnel syndrome since John Hancock.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 p.m. to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Guests like legendary civil rights icon and comedian Dick Gregory.
Today I shut everything down. My wife was laughing because if it wasn't from the show, y'all wouldn't hear from me. And that's why you have people listening to you that don't listen to other things. First, they want to hear you. There's something in your voice. When I got off the plane yesterday, my wife told me, she said, you know, your friend called in 1 or 2 days. And I said, well, move Wednesday around. And we do it on Wednesday and tell them I do the day date on Thursday.
Well, Mr. Gregory, that I thank you so much for that because it is always a pleasure to have you on. The king of all talk show hosts, Bill Donahue.
Well, you're very kind, and thank you, Scott. And I don't mean to look like I'm kissing a baby, but you are very good yourself. I will say this about you. You don't float a battleship of words around a rowboat of thought. And I'm afraid I do that once in a while. I do that usually when I'm least convicted or informed about my answer. The less I know, the more I talk. I think that's a lot of these are some of the things I learned over the years. The slow learner has learned after 5,000 television shows. But everybody should have the break that I had. A lot of breaks. And my hat's off to you. Thank you for your pursuit. I noticed that too. You reminded me of all the times that we worked very hard again and again to get guests that we wanted, including Ralph Nader and many others. So it's been a joy. I'm pleased to have been here, and I hope it'll cut.
I think it'll. WWGH Radio, now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. Join us.
Okay, we're back once again with Fred Malone. And Fred, we've been talking about how the time changes, and well, we have to go along with it somehow.
Whether we want to, or sometimes it's kicking and screaming, you know.
Yeah.
But I was mentioning to Charlie off air that we had our annual meeting at the Mohawk Historical Society last night up in Sycamore. And, I've talked about Mohawk a lot on this, and you're a member.
Yes, yes.
But it was 26 years ago. This summer that the Mohawk Historical Society was formed. And at that time, we were having a Sycamore Summerfest, a street fair in town. And right across the street from the bank where I worked was the old Sycamore Frozen Foods Locker.
Okay.
You probably remember that.
Yes.
So it was basically out of business. And Dick Eckleberry, who owned the telephone company in town, had bought that building. And the front end of it, we decided to put a little makeshift museum in. Didn't have any idea how it was going to go. So we put out the call before the festival started that if you had some things you'd like to put on display, we were going to set up this little makeshift museum. Well, about a week before that was when we had asked for things to be brought in. We went down, opened the building, and here was all this stuff in the building.
Yes.
People just came bringing things out of the closets, you know, and to give to us. So from the humble beginnings of that one room in the old frozen food locker to today, two big rooms, two big buildings, a new building that is being started yet this month that should be finished by, I'm hoping, July 1st, to the purchase of the old Township Hall in Melmore, and a beautiful museum we've grown in the last 26 years.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but time marches on, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it isn't.
Yeah. We have to get in step. Now, I remember long before the museum, my dad used to, well, we all went fishing up that way every year. And my dad used to go up there, though, and wade in the Sycamore Creek.
Right.
And he brought back with him some of the most unusual fossils.
Oh, yes. A lot of fossils.
I couldn't get over it. I mean, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I've waded the Sycamore Creek many times and collected Indian artifacts.
Yeah.
Same way with the Sandusky River. Taking a canoe down the Sandusky River or up the Sandusky River and searching for Indian artifacts along there and fossils. But you're right, absolutely right. A lot of fossils came out
That's
of the Sycamore
amazing,
Creek and Honey Creek, which also ran through Melmore and dumped into that, and the Sandusky River, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So the history goes back hundreds of millions of years.
Oh, it does. It absolutely does. And if you would do the same thing with the Whetstone and the old Tangi River, I'm sure you could find the same types of things.
That's right. One of the things that old-timers have talked about in the old Tangi creek or river were what they called Indian stones.
Mm-hmm.
They were round stones that people mistakenly thought Indians ground their grain in there.
Right. Yeah. Right.
But and over the years, freezing and thawing has cracked most of them.
Yeah. Down in Delaware, I have a friend that goes mudlarking. You know what mudlarking is?
No.
When you're wading the river looking for antiquities or oddities or fossils or things like you're talking about. He's collected several things like that out of the Delaware, the river that runs through the which would be the Olentangy.
Right. I went to Belleville, there was a little doings going on, and they had some antiques and this and that, and I saw a pedal, a step-on pedal, and a man said that he found that and some other things that I bought in the banks of a river in Connecticut.
I can believe that.
And I treasure that step because you can see where a blacksmith actually took a punch and put little divots or whatever.
Indentations, right.
Mm-hmm. So your foot wouldn't slip
right.
on. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, but here's the thing. People don't take the time to do that type of thing now like they did 50, 75 years ago.
Right.
You know, kind of a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
I was talking to another friend of mine here just a few weeks ago about cemeteries. You know, during the Victorian era, people took picnics and went to cemeteries to have picnics.
Yes, they did, yes, as a matter of fact.
They did, yeah. In fact, if you go back and look, you can sometimes find pictures of large gatherings in places like, what's the big one down in Columbus, Green Lawn?
Yeah, I think it is Green Lawn. Yeah.
Places like that, and in the bigger cities, that was a space where they could go have a picnic and enjoy the quiet and the solitude amongst the tombstones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it probably happened here many years ago.
Oh, I'm sure it probably did. I know it did in Delaware at the big cemetery. I think that one's called Oak Grove. I know it happened there. Mm. And where I grew up in Logan, we had a cemetery called Oak Grove, and people used to picnic in there. We had a lot of pictures on our historical society down in Hocking County that had photographs of people from the Victorian era in their long dresses with their parasols and their top hats. Spending time in the cemetery, having picnics and socializing and walking among the stones and reading the inscriptions. I think that's why there were so many different and varied inscriptions on stones back in those days.
Right, yeah. I wonder, too, what is the future of a cemetery? Probably. Is it going to be there 300 years
from
now?
Well, you know, I don't know. You know, they've land is so precious anymore.
Right, yes.
And there are many more people that are opting for cremations these days for a couple of reasons.
Yeah, that's getting to be cost.
Space and cost. Those are probably the two biggest. And, of course, I come from a family that still owns and operates a funeral home in Lucasville, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the McKinley Funeral Home, which my uncle started back before World War II, is now operated by my cousin, William McKinley. Odd.
Yes, right.
Odd that we would have a William McKinley in our family.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, Charlie. It's, you know, there's so many different options for people now with cremation. And you can have, there's a section here in the Marion Cemetery now where they have these stones that you can have your cremation remains put inside the stone.
I remember I used to sell those.
Which takes up a heck of a lot less space.
Yeah. And a little cylinder went down in there.
Yes, right, exactly.
And put your ashes in a plastic bag, more or less, and capped it up. Yeah.
So that's becoming very popular now. And of course, in big cities like New York and Los Angeles and places like that where property is selling for such extreme amounts of money, I think you're going to see that more and more, and I don't think that many people opt for the above ground burials. Mausoleums.
The tombs are
mausoleums. I don't think you're seeing that as much as you used to.
No, I don't think so either.
I think that kind of maybe peaked back in the early part of this last century.
And what, like I say, 100, 200 years from now. What's
it going to be? Yeah. I don't know.
No,
maybe they'll put us in a capsule and shoot us into outer space. You know?
Hey, now that's a possibility.
Well, I'm sure someone's thought of that already.
There's a lot of room out there.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But again, it's just all part of a changing world, and to me, it's fascinating to think about these things and then to think back and read some history to see what things were like 200 years ago or 250 years ago. When this country was being considered. Reading a book right now about Washington. It's called Washington's Circle, and it was about the people that Washington put around him when he accepted the presidency of this country as our first president. People like Alexander Hamilton and John Adams and John Jay and people like that. Henry Knox. Quite interesting to see how things were actually formed back then, those days.
And the thing, too, what was communication like back then?
Very time-consuming.
Yes, how did you communicate with people 100 miles away?
Yeah, well, it took time, you know. It took weeks for when Washington was notified that he had won the election. He was, of course, at Mount Vernon. And at that time, the capital of the United States was going to be New York.
Yes.
So it took weeks for him to get from Mount Vernon all the way up to New York before he could even be sworn in. And then, of course, eventually it was moved down to Philadelphia and was there for a while before Washington City was founded. But, yeah, it took weeks before they could get anything back. And when they were doing, you know, we were talking about Marietta being settled and that whole area along the Ohio River and all the survey work being done, they could do the surveys, which took months and sometimes years to do, and then to compile it and send it to a central location took months more.
Oh, yeah.
Months more. So,
And I read the book written by General Grant about and how often he would leave the battlefield on a horse and go to Washington to talk to Lincoln.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was, yeah. And that took, you know, again, that could take weeks, depending on where he was to get back. So, yeah, communication has changed even in my lifetime, from growing up on the farm and having a party line that you had to pick up the receiver and ask the operator to make a connection for you, and there were 25 other people sharing that line, to now where you've got your phone you carry around in your pocket.
That's right. And back then, on the party line, we were always aware that people were listening.
Oh, sure.
So you had to be careful what you said.
Yeah, well, that's what happened with Bogey and Bacall's wedding over in Malabar. They planned this wedding, and it was not supposed to be a big deal, but because there were 20-some people on Louis' party line, when he called the judge to make the arrangements, everybody heard it.
Yeah,
pretty soon there were 500 people out in the front lawn.
Amazing.
Wanting to go to the wedding. So, But I don't know, Charlie. It's a new world, interesting world.
And when you look to it on Facebook, the growing up in Marion, how people are fascinated and inquisitive about what used to be in Marion.
It is. And what do they tell me now? There's thousands of people that are members
it's
of that.
It's just amazing.
Yeah. I think I've heard something like 15,000 people that actually belong.
Now, an interesting thing, too, the other day I gave a talk at Kingston, and I saw a lady. She looked at me several times like I must have known her and she must have known me. Afterwards, it turned out to be a lady.
You know, Nan Britton, the mother of President Harding's only child, wrote the first tell-all book called The President's Daughter.
Yes, it is a very detailed book, should we say?
Wow, is it detailed? I've seen instruction manuals that were less detailed.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it. This is Scott Spears, and I hope you join me Monday through Friday from 12:10 to 2 p.m. to listen to guests like these. Phil Donahue.
29 years, and imagine what happened during those times. And we talked about it, and this show had my name on it. It was wonderful. You got to meet everybody. Is the caller there?
Sally Jesse Raphael.
All they wanted was shock value. And so they put in producers to do that kind of show, and I kept saying, no, I won't. And I made a conscious decision to do what I didn't want to do because I needed the money. And eventually they put me out of my misery by firing me, and that's okay.
Cookie legend, famous Wally Amos.
And around the corner comes George and Barbara Bush. The first thing that occurred to me to do was to play.
Legendary comedian Phyllis Diller.
But it was kind of interesting because Phyllis Diller kind of always played on this, hey, I'm ugly image.
Well, baby, let me put it like this. I used to get so much revenue for playing witches. That's witches. As in Halloween. And darling, after I had that first beautiful facelift, I never again was offered a witch role.
Is that right?
Now that tells you a lot.
It definitely does.
And my social life improved.
Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m., right here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Okay, we're back once again with Fred Malone and talking about history, for one thing. And Fred, the attention given to growing up in Marion on Facebook is just tremendous. And I was, now here's, and I don't want to flower myself up, but when I was speaking at Kingston, Bob Goyer, who's in charge of personnel out there,
right.
I showed him a couple of pictures of me working on top of the courthouse, and he said, could I have permission to put those on Facebook? I said, well, sure. And so they are. They're a picture of me.
Up on top of the
on top
where
of the
Lady Justice was.
Right.
Yeah.
And nowadays, that was so much, so long ago that hardly anybody remembers.
No.
But when they put it on Facebook, different people said, yes, I was there. I watched
it. I watched it happen, yeah.
Oh,
well, that's a good part of today's communications and Facebook and things like that. Yeah. There's a good side to it as well as a bad side, you know.
And I met when I was talking, I saw a man that I used to go fishing with, a man who was a woodworker galore, and a man that used to make sauerkraut in a 20-gallon crock.
Yeah.
And the era had passed.
Oh, yeah, sure. And, absolutely. You know, my dad used to make horseradish in the house.
Oh, really?
And it would be so strong, it'd run everybody out of the house.
Eyes would water,
you had to leave the house when he was making horseradish because you couldn't stand it.
And my son-in-law in his backyard has a large horseradish plant.
Does he?
Yes. I've never dug any of it up, but I should, although I don't want to cry over it.
Well, that would have been the good thing, you know, 75, 100 years ago of having a summer kitchen.
Oh.
You can make the horseradish in the summer kitchen and not fog up the whole house.
Yes, yes. Right. Yeah, oh, boy, sure. Oh, boy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, going out and talking to places like Kingston and Primrose and those type of things, it's a lot of fun. It really is, because it triggers a lot of memories in people that are aging and sometimes have problems with what they did yesterday or last week. I mean, I have that problem now.
Sure.
But it's fun to invoke those memories, because that brings back all those pleasant things and good thoughts for people. I think that's a great thing. And I enjoy any opportunity I have to talk to groups like that, because it's fun for me, and I know it's fun for them as well.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So. But I want to mention Lowell Volk Park. You know, you're a big proponent of Lowell Volk, and you're there quite a bit. When I was over there a few weeks ago, I picked up, you know, several of their pamphlets.
Yes,
but
right.
The one in particular, and I know you've participated in this before, but I wanted to mention it for those people that may have not been to Lowell Volk or don't keep up with what's going on over there. Living History Days is coming up May 31st. Through June the 2nd.
Yeah, that's right.
And they bill it as a fun historical event, which is now taking place in its 17th year.
Boy, it's
That's
hard.
Amazing,
yes,
isn't it,
it
that
is.
It's been going on that
yes.
long? Great for the family, with many hands-on demonstrations. Concessions will be available. And then they have a bus tour that's a first-come, first-serve, and the bus tour will depart at 11:45 on Saturday, the 1st of June, and that's immediately after the capture of Colonel Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that bus tour is going to take you around to show you the various locations.
Yeah. I think it's going to, one place would be that Heckert.
Yes. So if you're interested in that and you want to take part in that bus tour, you need to be there at least, I would say, by 11 o'clock.
Right.
Because first come, first serve. You know, I don't know how many seats they've got on the bus. But the opening ceremony is actually at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. And there's events planned for all day long. And then in the evening, I think the actual ceremonies and so forth close at 4 o'clock. But then at 8 o'clock that in the evening, from 8 to 10, you can go back for lantern tours.
Uh-huh. Okay.
People that are all set up there. For those people that are interested, on Friday, May the 31st, at 8 o'clock, they're having the Native American War Council.
Ooh,
there,
okay.
War Council there.
And those Indians are dressed with makeup and everything.
Oh, absolutely. I would imagine Roger will be there.
Yes,
won't he?
He will.
Yeah,
he's always there. Yeah.
And his son.
Yeah.
In fact, I think this is Roger's son here.
His
son's on this brochure that I picked up. But then on Sunday, this continues on Sunday again. On Sunday, it opens at 10 and runs until, again, 4 o'clock. And they will do the capture of Colonel Crawford again on Sunday, but there's no bus tour on Sunday. But a lot of stuff going on, things for the kids to do. There's a children's plant walk. Some different people that are going to talk. There's a singer. There's a storyteller. And again, on Sunday, they'll have the plant walk again for kids. And Vane Scott, I don't know this person, but he's going to be doing the Many Faces of Old Glory, so that sounds kind of interesting.
Sure.
You're looking for something to do that weekend. It's the weekend after, of course, Memorial Day weekend, which is coming up this next weekend. So May 31st through June 2nd at Lowell Volk Park, Living History Days. Little plug. What a wonderful park that is.
Oh, that is. Absolutely.
And don't know whether I mentioned on air or off air, but my friends and I and my wife, we went to both Lowell Volk, and then the following week we went over to Heckert, which is on State Route 19.
Right.
And then we went to the Sears Nature Preserve, State Nature Preserve, and I forget that route number, but it's right off of Route 4 just outside
That's
of
right.
Bucyrus.
It's a Crawford, Wyandotte County line, or Marion,
Crawford, Marion County line,
right,
road. But that was also very nice. Lots of nice hiking trails through there, and a lot of beautiful wildflowers this time of year. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
But some of the first growth trees still there.
Wow.
And in all those parks.
That's amazing.
Great park system, and it's in our backyard, too.
Right. There's a lot of things you can do, a lot of things you can see, and a lot of things to take your kids.
Oh, absolutely.
And get them interested.
Get them outdoors. You know, like we were saying earlier, when we were kids, we couldn't wait to get up in the morning and have breakfast out of the way because we took off out the back door,
yeah,
and we
right.
didn't come back until dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, today I don't see kids doing that. I mean, it's... I understand in part why you can't, because of all the kidnapping and all the types of things that are going on these days. It didn't occur 60 years ago. But we never spent, in the summertime, we never were in the house. We were always outdoors doing
something. And never had to even consider any things.
No.
And in Bucyrus, where I grew up, around Lizzie's Bottom, bottom land, we used to hide behind trees to watch the bums in their hobo camp.
Yeah.
And I can still picture one of them, his face, and he always had his little dog under his arm.
Yeah.
And they had just come off the railroad.
Off the railroad, yeah. Yeah, and in those days, all the tramps and the bums and the guys that rode the rails knew what houses were good houses and what houses were bad houses, because they had their own coat of marks
that they
would either mark on a tree in the front yard or on the fence post that led to the house.
Yeah.
And certain marks would tell you that this was a place you could get something to eat, or this was a place that you didn't dare go up to the door because you might get shot at.
Yeah, right. My mother kept a separate set of silverware and dishes for hobos to feed them on the back steps of our house.
Yeah.
And about once a week or once every 2 weeks,
you'd have
to drop by.
You'd have somebody there, yeah.
Never had to be afraid.
No, you didn't.
They ate and went on.
Yeah, well, they were people that were guys that were forced out of work because where they worked was closed down or it was a depression, and there just weren't jobs enough for everybody, and they were just trying to stay alive, Charlie.
That's right.
Just trying to stay alive.
Well, can you imagine any of us having to do that, to try to stay alive on our own?
No, well, of course, there again, you know, that's what prompted FDR to come up with a lot of the programs.
Well, that's right.
And part of the New Deal that he did, you know, the 3C and the WPA and things like that, because it provided work. It just didn't give people a handout.
Sure.
It made them feel good because they were actually doing something for the money that they were getting for the government.
Yeah, right.
And look how many places in Ohio that were built by the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Oh, my land.
Lake Logan, where I grew up, was dug by the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Yeah, in Bucyrus, we had what we always called the new reservoir, and we had the old reservoir, too. But the new one had all these hundreds of tall pine trees planted by the CCC.
Yeah, they were all saplings when they were put in.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely. That was the same thing that took place in Hocking County. The seven state parks that are in Hocking County, of course, the one everybody knows is Old Man's Cave. All of those trails that were put in there, all those improvements that were done by the 3C and the WPA.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Now, in this area, we had a 3C camp here at the corner of University Drive and that the other road that goes east and west. I should know that.
Is it Route 95?
No, there's a group of tall oak trees.
Oh, I know where you're talking about.
Okay, yeah.
That road.
Yeah, that road. Yeah, and that was where the 3C camp was, right there.
Now, in Hocking County, ours was at out at Zaleski.
Oh.
You ever been to Zaleski?
No, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, well.
Is there a Zaleski State Forest?
Yes, there is, right. Absolutely. Okay. Zaleski State Forest. But there was an honor camp. Take it back. It started out as a 3C camp. Today, it's an honor camp for the prison system in Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the trustees that are sent to Zaleski help to maintain all of those parks in southern Ohio.
Wow.
And they're also there as firefighters.
If a fire
breaks out, one of those, they will be drawn into service to help fight the fires. Yeah.
Wow.
But it started out as a 3C camp, right?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been to Mohican State Park?
Oh, yeah. That's just next door to them. That's only 7 miles. It's a crow flies from Malabar, obviously.
That's right.
Yep.
And that was the place to go when I was younger. If anyone was going to go out they'd go to Mohican State Park.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And down our way, down in the Hocking County area, Buckeye Lake was a big place to go back to them because, you know, they had the big dance, the big ballroom.
Yes.
Where big names would go play in the 30s and 40s and even into the 50s and 60s, it was still operating. So that was big for us then. And if you go up further north, up into the Seneca County area or in Attica, it's Meadowbrook.
Up
at Bascom.
Yes, I've been there many times.
That was a big draw for people. Yes. In fact, there was an amusement park there at Meadowbrook that most people don't know about.
And still a lot of people go there for picnics and reunions.
Absolutely. And the big ballroom is still there.
Yes, it is.
Which housed people like the Dorseys and Glenn Miller and people like that played there during the 40s and 50s.
I remember one time years ago, I went there to judge a candy, like a baking goods thing. This was all candy, and I was a judge.
That's a good thing to be a judge for.
Yes, we'll be right back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. For Jim Lavelle, the man handcuffed to Lee Harvey Oswald when he was assassinated.
So when you're coming out the door with Lee Harvey Oswald handcuffed to you, you're there to protect him. Take me through that walk. What do you see? How did it happen?
All right, well, as I walked through the door, I could see, I've always made it a habit in my career, especially as a detective, if I went into a room where there's more than one people around, I did a quick look over of all of them, up and down. So I saw Ruby. He was standing there, and he was holding that pistol in his left hand pressed against his leg just above his knee. Well, he was surrounded by police officers and reporters, but none of them was looking down. They were all looking up head high, and I